Wisconsin weighed in on recent comments made by House Speaker Mike Johnson, first saying Republicans probably will try to repeal the CHIPS Act and then walking back those comments. The act helps boost U.S. production of those semiconductor chips that are used in everything from cars to appliances.
We've talked repeatedly about their intention to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, now to get rid of the CHIPS Act. And let's talk about manufacturing, which is a critical issue for many of the states that will make the difference in this election.
Former President Trump holds three events across North Carolina. More than 70 million Americans have already cast early ballots. Britain's Conservative Party today elected outspoken lawmaker Kemi Badenoch as its new leader. She's the first black woman to lead a major political party, and it follows their defeat that ended 14 years in power. This is ABC News. It is time to fall back. Daylight saving ends this weekend, meaning we get an extra hour. For some, the changing of the clocks also brings unwanted changes.
At 2 a.m. on Sunday morning, daylight saving time ends and standard time is back. With winter approaching, our days become shorter. And for a lot of people, that lost hour of daylight can bring on something called SAD, seasonal affective disorder. It's described as a feeling of panic, fear, and anxiety all rolled into one, and it affects millions. Light therapy can help. So can yoga, walking, and antidepressants. If you're feeling it, especially after changing your clock, call your doctor. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The World Health Organization and UNICEF say the final phase of the polio vaccination campaign was set to resume today in northern Gaza. Intense battles and Israeli strikes targeting Hamas in North Gaza led to delays. Fighting also continues in Lebanon between Israeli forces and Hezbollah. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
Wisconsin has many state symbols, but did you know there's an official ballad?
Oh, Wisconsin, land of my dreams.
Oh, Wisconsin, land of my dreams, composed by Sherry Sarazin.
I don't think it was an hour, and I had the music matched up.
With long ago help from her grandmother.
She wrote a poem in the late 1920s about where she lived in Wisconsin.
And it's now the state ballad. So are these also official Wisconsin symbols? The Kringle, Wood Violet, American Water Spaniel? The answer coming up. The official process can take years and includes advocating the legislature to make it law. Now, along with the official ballad, are the Kringle, Wood Violet, and American Water Spaniel also state symbols? Yes, each is a celebration of the state and a slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Over the last week, clerks around Wisconsin have been putting their election equipment to the test. It's a common practice. They've been doing it for years. But these days, they hope inviting the public to see it all for themselves helps prevent misinformation. Mike Moen reports.
According to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, all municipalities must conduct a public test of their electronic voting equipment within 10 days of each election. Algoma City Clerk Aaron Miller describes it as a pretty detailed run-through.
We will take the voting machine out of the vault, and we will go through the whole process of putting the cartridges in the places where they're supposed to go, adding the safety seals, recording the safety seals, and then putting the test ballots through the machine to ensure accuracy.
In a recent Gallup poll, 57% of Americans say they're confident votes for president this year will be accurately counted. However, partisan gaps have widened, with faith and accuracy waning among Republican respondents. In a battleground state like Wisconsin, Miller says these tests are important so administrators can show how consistent they are in overseeing elections. She says they're a good training opportunity, too.
I have my poll workers put a blank ballot through so they can see what happens, you know, with the machine. I have them put a ballot that somebody maybe happened to overvote in a certain selection, so they can see how the machine is going to react to that.
If something abnormal pops up during testing, state law requires local clerks to remedy the situation before voters can use that machine on election day. Administrators around the country have said they're relying on aging voting equipment, with calls to boost federal funding for that type of infrastructure. Miller says her team is lucky because their machines were recently upgraded. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 50s. Tonight, rain after midnight, low of 42. Rain is likely for Sunday, with highs in the low 60s. Sunday night, showers and storms, temperatures around 60 degrees. For Monday, more rain and a high near 69.
It's 48 at our studios.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next program, is it the last gasp of democracy?
Is it the pre-election depression special on the John and Gordy Show?
Tune in.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8. A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here's this week's episode. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cripescast. We are just days away from the election, and I think I speak for everyone when I say thank you. Thank you, Jesus. This could not come soon enough. You know, I'll tell you this much. If I see one more political ad, I just might put my phone down and start enjoying my life. This, I hope, is going to be the last political episode I do in a while. I know you guys don't follow me for politics or whatever, and I don't really enjoy talking about politics. But before I was a comedian, I was a journalist. And so I've got this maybe compulsion to do it every once in a while. So thanks for bearing with me. And look, here's where it comes from. I think we're more divided than ever. And I think truth is becoming less and less relevant. And it's so frustrating for me as like a former journalist to watch this happen. And what's happened really is as technology has advanced, civility and kindness and Midwest nice, even it's all declined. You know, we're meaner to each other than we ever have been before because we can't understand how the other side can feel the way they feel. And that's really because some of us are operating with facts and others are operating with lies presented as facts, you know, conspiracies. But the people who believe in conspiracies, they truly believe them. And those are facts to those folks, you know, and the people with like facts need to understand, I think, that those who believe in conspiracies, they're not dumb. They're not ignorant. They're not They've just been taken advantage of by social media or Russia or China or whoever benefits from division. And I think that's the thing to really look out for. Say to yourself, who's benefiting from division? Those are not the people that we can have running our lives. It's kind of funny, like Russia and China, they benefit from division and they took the playbook from us. Like united we stand, divided we fall. We literally told them how to defeat us on a bumper sticker. You know, it's wild. But the thing is, though, I don't think, even though things are tough right now, this can't mean that we stop trying to get truth across to those who are not receptive to truth. Just because they're not receptive now doesn't mean they won't be. It just means we have to work harder to bring people together so we can stop the division. As hard as it might be, don't cut people out of your life who believe something, even if that something is awful. I think they need you in their life more than ever. And over time, I think we can kindly plant the seeds of truth. The frustrating thing is it does take time. And again, technology is doing this to us. You know, social media companies have trained their algorithms, literally trained their algorithms to favor conflict over cooperation because conflict, it's what keeps you engaged. Just look at reality TV, for instance. You know, have you ever seen a reality TV show where everyone got along the entire time? No. No, of course not, because that would have been canceled by the first episode. Social media is about inventing conflict In the same way, reality TV is all about inventing conflict. You know, here's the thing. I think the more we let our leaders rebrand truth, the more people will feel like they're just going crazy. And division plus crazy can easily lead us into civil war. It can. Nothing makes China and Russia happier than us fighting with each other. You know, that's why they account for so many of the Twitter users or X users or whatever Elon calls it. They are there to sow division. And it's working. It's working real good, actually. So, look, that is all a long way of saying that I am trying my best to help with these episodes. I know it's hard to hear about politics. I know we just want a break from it. And I think the rest of my content is a break from it. And for those who are seeking something else, some sort of sanity and all this, that's what I'm trying to bring to the table. And no, I'm not perfect. And, you know, I'm as susceptible as anybody to misinformation and all that. We all are susceptible to that. And so I'm very humbly trying to find the truth on this podcast. And I'm trying to create just good discussion between people from opposite ends of the political sphere, even. And that's sort of what this week's episode is about. Yeah, you're about to hear a political conversation with Steve Scafidi, who's the host of the Steve Scafidi Show on WTMJ in Milwaukee. He's the former mayor of Oak Creek, Wisconsin. He is a Republican. And also Dan Schaefer, who is the political editor of Civic Media, the founder of the Recombobulation Area. And though Steve leans to the right and Dan leans to the left, I chose these guys because they both deeply care about the facts, and they both make sure that they are relying on facts to form their opinions. And that is unfortunately becoming rarer and rarer these days. So bottom line, I just want us to be less divided, and I want us to be guided by truth. And I want us to, you know, do that so we can enjoy, like, this is humanity's honeymoon period, or it should be, you know, before our, like, before there's a million robots running the road, running around on the road, those AI robots, you know, before we've got them around here influencing even more, is like, let's, as humanity, just get on the same page first. So, all right. I am off the soapbox, but here's this week's episode. We filmed this live at Vivarium in Milwaukee. Are you ready for a good show tonight? Excellent, excellent. All right, well, I've got a sheet right here with some questions on it, but if any of you guys have questions, raise your hand, and she'll kind of be looking around, and you can bring it up, and if you ask a question, you don't like what somebody's saying on stage, we're going to play a game where you have to ask the question the most Midwest nice way you can, you know? So you got to offer a casserole, throw in an ope there, a sorry for breathing kind of a thing, you know? Anyways, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. But really, this is just a conversation. By the way, when I put up this thing that I was doing this and talking about politics, I had a bunch of people say, don't get involved in politics. Don't do this. But I think that's kind of the problem right now is that a lot of us, you know, we're not talking to each other and therefore not understanding each other. And therefore, you know, we're kind of like divided right down the middle. That's all we're doing. Just trying to do it. So, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for host WTMJ, former mayor of Oak Creek, ladies and gentlemen, Steve Scafidi. Give him a big round of applause. Good to see you. I'm doing good. Have a seat right there. And also, welcome to the stage, ladies and gentlemen. He is the political editor of Civic Media. He is the founder of the Recombobulation Area. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Schaefer. Give him a big round of applause. Nice to see you, Dan. These couches are, that might be, is that going to be goofy? You want to sit and see if it's comfortable there? Otherwise, I can sit right there.
I like that.
You like that? Okay. That's really nice. I like this. How you guys feeling? You doing good?
I'm good. It's a good crowd.
Yeah, it is a good crowd. Give yourselves a big round of applause for coming out here tonight.
And if you don't know Steven, you don't know Dan, I'll let them kind of give their spiel in a second here. But the brief note is one leans right, one leans left. And so the idea here is that we can have a conversation about politics and it doesn't need to be a show. So that's kind of the goal here. But Dan, can you tell us about yourself, how you got your start and what you're up to these days?
Yeah, well, I am currently the political editor at Civic Media. I just recently joined the Civic Media Network over the last couple months here. Many people in the audience might know my work as the founder of the Recombobulation Area. Hey, all right. Got some fellow recombobulators in the audience. But yeah, I've been a journalist in and around Milwaukee for much of the past, 10, 15 years. And a few years ago, I wanted to start writing something with a voice, with an opinion, with a perspective. So I started the Recombobulation Area on Substack in late 2019 while I was a stay-at-home dad. I grew the publication over the last few years, made it my full-time job, formed a small business, and then this year made the jump to the Civic Media Network. So hopefully many of you have had the opportunity to subscribe and check out my words at the Recombobulation Area. I always loved the name, the Recombobulation Area, of course.
It is a great name.
The post-security place at the Milwaukee airport. I now get many people tweeting pictures of themselves at the actual Recombobulation Area at me, which I always enjoy. But we have such a discombobulating politics in the state of Wisconsin, and I thought the Recombobulation Area would be a great name for an opinion column where you kind of take stock of things, piece everything together, and make your way to your destination.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Give him a big round of applause, ladies and gentlemen.
Very long bio, but good one.
Yeah, Steve, now it's your turn. And if you don't mention the fact that you were a marathon runner.
A long time ago.
You guys he ran a whole 26.2, whatever. I don't know. I'm not good at math, but
I could run the 0.2 right now.
Run the 0.2? I'd like to
probably
see that,
pretty
actually.
Fast, but that'd be about it. I actually have worked with Dan because Dan was on my show for at least a year plus.
Yeah.
And not to get off my bio, which is also amazing and interesting. Dan is really good at his job. He does long form looks at state races. I don't know that anybody looks at it in more detail with more accurate depictions of what the race is really doing, the people that are running for office, than he does. So it was a joy to have him on the show. He went to Civic Media. I do the morning show on WTMJ. Not to be historical, it used to be where Charlie Sykes was. A lot of evolution at our station. We used to be a Scripps-owned company. Now we're by Good Karma Brands. Sort of changed the dynamic of talk radio. Still sort of feeling our way. I love talking about politics, but I'll tell you right now, most politics is bullshit as it's presented now. It's sort of a waste of time. A lot of nonsense. So I try to parse through the nonsense as best I can, something that's not possible. But I enjoy what I do. Like a lot of you, I'm apprehensive about what's going to happen next Tuesday. I actually volunteered. My wife says I'm nuts. I volunteered to work from 11 to 5 a.m. live on the radio, mostly by myself, because I always stay up anyway. And I have for all the elections I've been alive for, basically, as an adult. I'm just fascinated by it. And there's so many storylines in this election. I know that people are nervous. Some people are excited. I have people that work on the campaigns, some people that come on the show that actually work in Mar-a-Lago. So I get that inside information. That's one of the things I pride myself on. It's having the great guests. But when Charlie reached out to me, I said, I want to do this because I love talking about the possibility of conversation that's not stupid and dumb. And I think we're going to do that.
Well, I hope so. But you really set the bar high right there.
I prefer too much pressure.
I just did 20 minutes of jokes to let them know that this was not going to be serious in any nature. But anyways, thanks. Well, let's kind of jump off on that point. I want to talk about like the division in politics. And I think like we got Thanksgiving coming up and we all got that one uncle that's a real expert on things. Whatever it is, right or left, but how do you have real authentic conversations with people in your family, especially maybe Hannah, who works with me? She is on the younger side of life, and she brought up having a hard time having conversations with people who are older than her, thinking like she doesn't know anything. And so like what are just some good tips for having productive political conversations with family and friends?
For me, it's keep it light, right? I mean, there are families now that are literally torn apart because of what's happened in the last, let's say, 8 years. And that's sad. And whenever anybody tells me one of those stories, and I get that, I get a lot of emails, a lot of texts from people that say, I can't talk to my brother anymore. And we were so close for 50 years. And that's sad on a lot of different levels. But for me, I have brothers-in-laws that are Trump supporters. I have, my wife's very liberal. I call myself a reasonable, rational conservative, and full disclosure, I never voted for Donald Trump, and I'm proud that I haven't. I understand why people do it. I don't blow people up for voting for him, because that's the world we have. We have two choices, and people make choices based on one issue, many issues. But for me, it's about doing it in a way, at a conversation, it can be a lighter conversation at a dinner table where you're just saying to each other, this is the world we live in. What are we doing here? Why are we going to hate each other because of this election or the election that just happened in 2020? It seems silly to me. So I would start at light. I would listen. I used to do this thing. It's a little bit of a deviation, but I used to do this thing called Amazing Faiths Dinner. And they gathered people of all different faiths, and we ate dinner together. And you listen to each other talk for 5 minutes. Each person got one card. You had a subject. You talked for 5 minutes. Everyone else listened. And we went around the table, 12 to 14 people. And at the end, you could ask questions, but it forced us to listen. And we are, I think, not as good of listeners as we should be, especially when it comes to politics. That would be my advice. Just listen better and don't overreact to whatever the person says, even if it horrifies the you know what out of you. Can we swear?
Yo, yeah, you can do it. Yeah.
If it horrifies the shit out of you, you still got to hear what they have to say. I didn't go
full. I don't know if shit counts anymore. They say it on the news.
Yeah,
now.
I thought about that. I was going to go full F word, but I held back.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I think, I've been a guest on Steve's show for the past, for a while. And one of the things that we always talk about, even though we disagree on a lot of things, is we can disagree without being disagreeable. And I think having that baseline level of respect is a really important aspect of being able to have those types of conversations.
You should applaud that. That's good.
And, just within this election season, I've had the opportunity to tag along with some candidates who are knocking on people's doors. And that can be an unpredictable experience, right? But I think for many of the more successful ones that I've seen on doors, they start not with talking about which party they're a part of or who's running for president or whatever it is. They try to find common ground. And finding common ground, I think, often starts with the issues and not necessarily with the individuals. Because the individuals, everybody has an opinion on Trump or Biden or Kamala Harris or whatever it might be. But if you talk about the issues, if you talk about education, if you talk about healthcare, different types of issues, that's where you can find more common ground because it's less colored by the red team, blue team of it all.
In that interest of the teams, I was going to bring that up because what politics has become, I feel like recently is, we're literally wearing different hats, like we become like a team thing. It's become Packers versus Bears, of course, in that scenario, the Bears are always wrong and there's no excuse to be a Bears fan. And if you are a Bears fan, you do need to seek professional help. OK,
it's also not Packers Bears because sometimes both teams win. Right.
Well, you got that going. Yeah, that's true. That's true. The Bears have had a long, history of being owned by the Packers. But not to bring up an Aaron Rodgers quote. But, why not? He's having a tough go of it right now. So that's all right. Sorry, Aaron. Yeah. Better. The thing about a Packer going to the Jets, probably not going to work out, historically speaking. The only thing you get out of that is crock shots. But anyways, so you bring up the issues. What do you guys think are the biggest issues on the ballot this year?
Dan, you go first.
Yeah, I think with any election, I think the biggest issue is almost always the economy. The polling will suggest that is the number one issue. And then I think you've got a pretty big partisan split on which is the next most important issue. I do, one of the things that I do at the Recombobulation Area, I do a breakdown of every new Marquette University Law School poll. There's one coming out tomorrow, so I'll be writing about that tomorrow. For Republicans, the number two issue is the border and immigration policy. And for Democrats, the number two issue is abortion and reproductive rights. Yes! A huge issue. Yes, absolutely. So I think you see that, people have their certain priorities and it depends on which party they're a part of. And I also think this has been a really difficult issue to poll because people have different ways of perceiving a word like election integrity or faith in elections or democracy or something like that. But I do think it is a huge issue, you know, after January 6th, after everything that the Republicans did to try to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. I just think basic fundamental American democracy is right there in with everything as one of the top issues in this campaign.
So I have a feeling in this election, and it's based on my feelings and what I hear from people, what I read when they send me texts and emails. And the way radio works now is I don't take calls anymore. I only have an hour of just politics. But the text line churns, the emails churn from people who are listening and have thoughts about what we're saying. I have a feeling about this election, and it goes back to the sort of the reversal of what has been the law of the land when it comes to abortion in this country. I have a feeling women are going to show up in this election in a really significant way. And I think they're going to speak loudly on the issue. And somebody asked me the other day, who do I think is going to win? Well, it's just a prediction. I just have a feeling that Kamala Harris will win this race. And as a Republican, that doesn't bother me. Because I, as I said before, the alternative is something that I don't like and I didn't vote for. But I think that issue is so important. It's on people's minds. And I think when everything shakes out, whatever that's Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Saturday, whatever it is, the role of women in this election, I think, will be the deciding factor. Republican women who choose not to vote for Donald Trump, and women in general, young women, middle-aged, older women who said, you know what? No. I don't like this, and I'm going to go vote. And I think that shows so far in the turnout. And I'm impressed by it. That's a good thing.
And I just want to say, too, if there are, I'm sure there are Trump supporters in this audience, too. And, you know, feel free to, like, bring up a question or whatever. Just because, you know, these guys have not voted for Trump doesn't mean that that's not, I mean, half the country is going that way. So it's a safe space is what I'm trying to tell you right now. 1,000%. So feel free to ask a question and bring up a point, and because you know we don't want it to all be on that route. Colleen, I'll let you find a question if there is one out there. But while we do that, Wisconsin once again is at the center of kind of the political universe, and this is an election where you know if you trust the polls, and some people do, some people don't, but this is a situation where Donald Trump could win the popular vote nationally, yet still lose because of the Electoral College. In 2016, it was reversed. And I think that brings up the question of the Electoral College. What do we think about the Electoral College? Do we like being deciding the future of the United States of America on a regular basis?
No, the Electoral College is ridiculous. You know, the argument about it saying that it's you know, ignores certain states. Well, we have like seven swing states that are going to determine the fate of the country, and nobody campaigning on a national level is going to maybe swing areas in, I don't know, Washington State or New York or Alabama or wherever. And you just have this hyper concentrated pressure cooker dynamic in Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, North Carolina, Nevada and Arizona, and that's going to determine billions of dollars pumped into those, you know, seven states to determine the outcome. It's an absurd way to do this. We need to reform this process one way or another.
So Dan and I have a common friend. His name is Phil Rocco. He's the associate professor of political. Oh, someone knows
Shout
Phil
out
Rocco.
Phil.
brilliant guy. He's an expert on Electoral College. I just did the podcast with him this week. In 1968, they almost got rid of it. And it didn't, you know, again, some states want to keep it and they couldn't get to pass the legal, you know, the congressional hurdle to change it. It's a very controversial thing that we do here. So we have a nation that says, that's my candidate. That's our president. But the Electoral College sort of comes in under the rug and says, hold on a second. These seven, six, five, whatever it is, states will decide what happens. I don't have the answer to this because there are states that are very, very small that essentially will be ignored if we don't have it, right? I mean, and maybe that's just because there's not many people there that maybe that's the right thing to do.
Because right now, big states are being ignored.
Yeah, it can go both ways. It gives little states power, electoral college, but if you get rid of it, college, they would have no power. They don't have enough people. And I always love this debate because it's people vote, land doesn't. And we got a lot of land out west with not many people in, but they also have a say now because of the Electoral College.
But fascinating. But don't you think that even in some of those smaller states, we have so much data now about where people vote in these voting patterns that you're still going to have, you know, you might still have Kamala Harris and Donald Trump campaigning in Green Bay, even if we have a national popular vote, because that's where the swing voters are.
That's a great point, because if we didn't have it, they would have to go everywhere, right? You won
exactly.
votes.
Wait. So what you're saying is whether we change it or not, we're still going to have to deal with this?
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. With just 3 days left to campaign, both candidates returning to key swing states. Today, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are in North Carolina. Harris, before leaving Wisconsin, weighed in on recent comments made by House Speaker Mike Johnson, first saying Republicans probably will try to repeal the CHIPS Act and then walking back those comments. The act helps boost U.S. production of those semiconductor chips that are used in everything from cars to appliances.
We've talked repeatedly about their intention to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, now to get rid of the CHIPS Act. And let's talk about manufacturing, which is a critical issue for many of the states that will make the difference in this election.
Former President Trump holds 3 events across North Carolina. More than 70 million Americans have already cast early ballots. Britain's Conservative Party today elected outspoken lawmaker Kemi Badenoch as its new leader. She's the first black woman to lead a major political party, and it follows their defeat that ended 14 years in power. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers take on Iowa. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football, it's Wisconsin against the Iowa Hawkeyes tonight at Kinnick Stadium. Both teams 5-3, kick off a little after 6:30. NBA, the Bucks are at home against the Cavaliers tonight, trying to snap a 4-game losing streak. Damian Lillard says when he was with the Trailblazers, he'd just take over games. How hard is that now?
It's hard because, I mean, my entire career, I've always been somebody who, if I can do one thing, I can take over. You know, I think I've joined a new team and the situation is different. I understand it is different, so I have to try to, you know, find a way to not just go back to what I've always done, because it's probably not always necessary. So I think that's probably the most difficult part, is like when things seem like it's getting out of control or the going is getting tough, you know, I'm able to put my hands on a little bit more. And I think just not being in that role is, you know, it's a little bit more difficult.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
It's time to get out the truth about Eric Hovde. Hovde made his money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it. How can he relate or make decisions for us? Now he's the CEO of a billion-dollar banking...
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 50s. Tonight, rain after midnight, low of 42. Rain is likely for Sunday, with highs in the low 60s. Sunday night, showers and storms, temperatures around 60 degrees. For Monday, more rain and a high near 69.
It's 51 at our studios.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Todd Alba joins us. Hey, Todd.
We're here in front of the Bonham Theater to talk entertainment. Todd forgot his battery pack. We are running off of Todd's truck engine.
I don't want to rub salt in the wound, but if your travel budget got cut, I'm just wondering if it coincided. All of a sudden, I got like a 10 grand a week per diem. I don't know if that is related.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
Darren Von Rudin, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Wisconsin Congressman Derek Van Orden wasn't really concerned about hearing from the farmers after he got done being unhappy with you about an ad you made months ago.
Our members didn't get to tell their stories, and in the end, if you don't agree with each other, at least the conversation can happen. That really didn't happen.
One would think being in Congress would require a slightly thicker skin.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays at 11 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. The John and Gordy Show.
Todd or Billy is on the phone.
It's really important that people take just a few minutes and educate themselves about their ballot. We finally have competitive districts here in Wisconsin, and Republicans always sneak an amendment onto our ballot. So we got to vote up and down the ballot, not leave stuff blank, not leave our voice silent.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here's this week's episode.
We have so much data now about where people vote in these voting patterns that you're still going to have, you know, you might still have Kamala Harris and Donald Trump campaigning in Green Bay. Even if we have a national popular vote, because that's where the swing voters are.
That's a great point, because if we didn't have it, they would have to go everywhere, right? You want
exactly.
votes.
Wait. So what you're saying is whether we change it or not, we're still going to have to deal with this?
So you just want to get rid of all of the campaigns part.
Yeah. I just don't want to hear so much about it. But, you know, right. that's me being a little cynical fella.
I think it would just be a little bit more spread out. You know, there are different swing areas in each and every state. And I'm just pointing out Green Bay because I think that's a swing area right now in Wisconsin. But I think you go to any state in the South, any state in the West, big states, small states, you're going to have swing voters in each of them.
Yeah.
And you want those campaigns to reach each and every one of those people and hear what they have to say, hear what the issues that matter to them. And right now it's just, you know, the blue wall and a couple other states and that's it. You know,
I wonder if people in like a state that doesn't really count in this election, they're going one way or the other hard. Are they even getting these commercials? Or are they just watching TV?
No.
Like regular people.
Yeah, they don't even know there's an election.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Like you go to Ohio, nothing's happening there. No.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
I do want to say, so let's say hypothetically, let's say if the Democrats win this time because of the Electoral College, is there going to be any political motivation for Democrats to change it? Because the Republicans did not have the political motivation when Trump won. So is this going to be kind of like gerrymandering where if it works for my party, I'm not going to fix it and that both parties are guilty of it? Or do you think one party has more incentive to get rid of it than another?
No, nobody. Who's going to change the rules when the rules are in your favor? That takes a brave soul to do that. Very rare.
Yeah. So you think there's just no hope for this?
No, I'm always full of hope. you asked me why we want to have these conversations, because at some point, maybe everyone will get sick of the way it is. So there'll be this upswell of starting to pick candidates in smaller races who then become senators or congressmen or congresswomen or governors who then get higher positions where they can actually affect change. Nothing happens fast in this country. Elon Musk. He gets something done right.
Oh, yeah. If you're a billionaire, you can buy anything. Yeah, you can buy the world, honestly. Let's talk about the Elon of it all and the money in politics. And, you know, this isn't just on the right. I mean, the Democrats, I think they've raised like $1 billion for
They outspend Republicans.
They outspend Republicans. And it's dark money. You have no idea where it's coming from. And that's a problem left, right and center. Is there a possibility of us getting the money out of politics? And that way they actually have to make a good political ad. You know, they can't just throw a bunch of, this person's going to take your child and cut their throat.
Sammy Baldwin is gay. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that. Surprising.
Yeah, newsflash. I didn't need a commercial.
That's your commercial. Thank you. Here's $100,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you think that there's any hope in getting the money out of politics? Because we are run by these two machines. Yeah. And both machine is very incentivized.
I think we agree on this one.
What?
It should be out of politics.
I mean, yeah, but again, with the Electoral College, we're talking about some sort of systemic reform, and we can't even get like basic things done in this country right now, much less, you know, realign the way that we elect people or get money out of politics. Like here in Wisconsin, the Uline family, Dick and Liz Uline, who own the Uline company based in Wisconsin, I think the last report said that they are the third biggest political donors in the entire country and have spent more than $125 million supporting Republicans in this election. Like, it's just, a, you know, and the more you cover this stuff, campaigns, elections, things like that, even at the local level, even in the state legislature, so much of it comes back to the fundraising. So much of it comes back to the money element, and it can make you really cynical about this. But I think, yes, there's hope for this in the future, though, because I do think the more people recognize this, the more that people can organize and stay engaged on these types of issues, the change still is possible.
What if we chip away at one element of it? Like, for that 125 mil, is that tax deductible? Like, is it? It's not tax deductible.
I don't think so.
They've probably found some loophole to do it.
Okay. All right. I don't think
they really care when you're a billionaire.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. Yeah, I suppose. What is it if it's like $25? You know. Let's talk about the key races in Wisconsin and politically, because based on what you guys are saying, a big amount of the change, a large amount of the change that's going to happen is going to happen very locally. And Dan, I know that you do a lot diving into the state races and everything. So you guys from sort of the right and the left in Wisconsin, what are the big races going on that a lot of people aren't talking about?
Yeah, well, beyond the obvious, the presidential race, the statewide Senate race, things like that, you know, the state legislature is in a really interesting place right now because we finally have new, fairer maps for the Wisconsin state legislature for the first time in more than a decade. And that, you know, came to fruition after so many years of voting in election after election. So it just reminds you of just how much every race matters in Wisconsin. But you look down ballot, I did a preview at this at the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media. Yeah, I'm the one guy crazy enough to write a preview of all 115 races happening in the Wisconsin State Legislature.
100,000 words or something like that.
Yeah. Jeez.
Crazy.
And so you can take a look through that, explore the race in your community, because so many of the things that happen in the state come back to the state legislature. And for so long, because of the gerrymandered maps, the Wisconsin state legislature has not been accountable to the people of Wisconsin, have not been addressing some of these majority type issues. And so, you know, in my preview, there were I identified 12 toss up or close races in the Wisconsin State Assembly. Some are right around here in the Milwaukee area, Assembly District 21, David Marsteller going against Jesse Rodriguez. Assembly District 61 with Lou Ann Bird against Bob Donovan. Those are the types of races that you might be seeing a couple ads here and there for. Those are the types of races that are going to determine the future of what happens in the state of Wisconsin on so many issues, on healthcare, on education, on college education funding, on marijuana legalization, on Medicaid expansion, abortion rights, every issue that you hear about in Wisconsin on a day-to-day basis when it's not election season, that comes back to these races that are happening in the Wisconsin State Assembly and State Senate. So there are so many really interesting ones that are in play right now. Another one I'd point out, the Senate District 8 in the region here, kind of the North Shore suburbs, Ozaukee County. Republican incumbent Dewey Strobel is going against Democrat Jody Habersh-Sinikin. That is one of the most interesting races happening anywhere in the state right now.
I'm fascinated by all these races. I'm fascinated to watch the assembly. I love the Hovde Baldwin race. She typically kicks butt in elections. Lots of money poured into this race. My Republican friends, strategist friends who are on my show say, I don't know, Hovde seems to be creeping up. Will if Trump wins, does Hovde win? I actually said on the show, and I think I said it earlier, I think Harris wins. And I'm not sure about that race. I'm just not sure about it.
Yeah.
It's close.
What are you seeing as the elements that Hovde, why do you think it's working for him? Is it the mustache or what? Did he look at a Paul Bunyan and be like, yeah, I want that Paul Bunyan porno stash. That's what I want.
When I first saw him, he looks like an actor on General Hospital to me.
He does.
It's like...
That's working in his favor, by the way.
It's a classic.
My aunt is a big fan, and I think that mustache has a lot to do with it, you know.
Let's bring him back. I had a mustache for 25 years.
Do you have a mustache for 25 years?
I did, 25 years.
You should bring that back.
I should bring that shit back, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, let's start a campaign for that. Yeah. What do you think is making that race so close?
Money.
Money, yeah.
Certainly, Hovde is an interesting dude. Why I think it's close and why I think he has a chance to win is that some people, some voters, especially Republican voters, admire someone who has sort of made this amazing business in case a bank. And they admire that, and they, in some cases, aspire to that, and they see that as a role model, so that'll get them some votes. You know, there's also this thing about fatigue with candidates. Tammy Baldwin has served 2 terms. I mean, Ron Johnson told us once that that was all he was going to serve, and then what happened there? So you can change your mind, too. But she, you know, there's some of that, voter fatigue. She's had her chance. Who's next? So that's, I think that's what the dynamic is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the race started to tighten up when we saw a lot of money being pumped into it. You know, as soon as we saw, like, the Uline's super PAC, Mitch McConnell's super PAC, putting tens of millions of dollars into this race, that seemed to tighten it up a little bit. But I also think that people thinking that Tammy Baldwin was going to be a runaway favorite this year was a little bit overstating things, too, because this is Wisconsin. It's always going to be a toss-up, especially in a presidential year. So you're going to get a ton of people who are going to come to the polls and just vote straight ticket, straight for whatever party it is. So if you're going to vote for Donald Trump, you're probably going to be voting for Eric Hovde, too. And so as we see these polls that are just show Wisconsin neck and neck, I think that's a big reason why we're seeing that in the Senate race, too, because there's not that many split ticket voters in the state of Wisconsin. And I think, you know, the ones who are really make a huge, huge difference in the state. And we saw that 2 years ago when Tony Evers and Ron Johnson both were reelected. And so I think it just goes to show, one, how important your vote is in Wisconsin, and how many of those independent or undecided or moderate votes that these candidates can win over. But I also think going into this year, thinking that Baldwin was the clear favorite the whole time, I think that was overstating things, too. I think it was always going to be an incredibly close race. This is Wisconsin. Like, we have incredibly close races here. That's just the way our politics are.
Do we have any audience questions at this point, Kelly?
I see a hand right there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's hear an audience question. That's great.
Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, I can hear you. Real good.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I saw a hand over here. Where,
from the darkness.
Here we go.
There we go. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. What's your name?
My name is Mark.
Mark, where are you from?
Cudahy.
Oh, nice.
I grew up in Cudahy. I love you.
Yeah. All you had to say is where you're from, and he loves you,
yeah,
you
that's
know?
That's awesome.
I'm okay with you, Steve.
All right. I get that all the time.
All right. I hear one of the candidates call the other one a Marxist or a communist all the time, and it's clear that he doesn't know what the difference between the two is. I am a beneficiary of a fine public education in the city of Cudahy, so I know the difference. I also know what a fascist is. They both call each other fascist. Do you believe one of these candidates is a fascist, and which one?
Whoa, that was quite the leading question there.
Cudahy ain't messing around tonight. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, guys, why don't you jump into that one? I'm going to go get a drink.
I'll be right back. The words that people throw around in elections, you know, you take it with a grain of salt. I don't think either one of these candidates fit that profile. I didn't vote for Trump, and I won't this time. He's a very unique person. Let me just put it that way. I don't like his style. I don't like the words he uses. He uses words that are hurtful, dangerous, using words to create these dramas and things that don't have to be part of elections. That's just the world we live in now, and whether it's social media, the culture we live in, reality TV.
Let me ask you this, because there are a lot of Trump supporters, and Trump brings something to the table. So if you guys had to say something
Nice
about Trump.
I'll say this. The way he handled this issue was horrifically wrong. But paying attention to the border and the border policy in this country is something that we should have done decades ago. And both parties have messed around with it. I played it on the show. I can take audio from Democrats who say the same things Republicans say now. They said it 10 years ago. Everyone's flipped on it. We should have some policy that makes sense. So I would say, if I'm going to say something nice, that's where it would end, because every way he's handled that issue has been horrifically bad, my opinion.
I'm going to bring up a very specific
local
issue that Donald Trump actually helped out with in Milwaukee. In 2020, his administration provided the funding for the bus rapid transit line that now runs in Milwaukee, the Connect One line that goes from downtown to the west side. That project probably wouldn't have happened without funding from the Trump administration. So yes, I'm not going to talk about any like broad-based issues that I'm going to agree with Trump on, but in that very specific instance, funding a public transit project in Milwaukee, I think that was a good thing.
What about the wars that we have going on? Obviously, you have Ukraine and Russia, and then you have Israel. And we are certainly helping Israel quite a bit from the financial aspect of it. But the people in Lebanon who have nothing to do with this, the people in Gaza who have nothing to do with this, are a lot of them are being killed in crazy numbers. What is a way of coming up with, how do we solve the problem in the Middle East? But how do we, you know, like, what are the elements on the right and the left that could help in coming up with a solution on this?
Since I'm the right side representative, it takes conservatives, Republicans, right-leaning individuals, citizens saying, okay, we may be pro-Israel, but we shouldn't be in favor of innocent people being slaughtered. There has to be, even in wars, there's rules of engagement, right? You can't just willy-nilly throw bombs. But, and I understand this is the hot button of all hot buttons in the world.
Yeah.
And it always has been, for the most part. So we get it, but we have to have consideration for the other side. And I'll take this from a perspective of being proud of this administration that I frankly didn't vote for. I wrote a Nikki Haley in 2020, so that was my choice. And I'm a big Nikki Haley fan because she was a governor, and I liked the leadership part of that. But when you're looking at these situations, it has to be a reasonable accommodation for both sides. It's not a one-sided argument. It's not Republican and Democrat. That's not how wars are fought. That's not how the world works. It has to be a consideration. This goes to the overarching theme of what just pisses me off the most. We have Congress, makes the laws, spends the money, and they play games constantly with the budget, you know, extending all their deadlines, not having the resources and the smarts to fix these things. If we keep doing this, it's on us. We keep sending these people to Washington, D.C. They're not electing themselves. All of us are electing those folks. So if you don't like it, get different people in there.
And that's a great point. But once we get them in there, I feel like they're going to do that no matter who it is. So how do we as people?
I don't think so.
You don't?
I think there are individuals who are. Look, I was a big Paul Ryan fan. And I know some people don't like Paul Ryan. But he was a guy who understood. What?
Yeah, I don't like Paul.
Yeah, I know. And fair question. I got to know him very well because I was mayor. He was my congressman. And we did a lot of work together. So I got to know the individual. Look, there's no perfect solution on this stuff. There's no one idea. It's not one Democratic idea, one Republican idea. If you think that, you're wrong. And until we get past that, we're not going to make any progress. So how do we change what they do in Congress? One, get better people. Actually have a leader, in this case, it's the president, who understands the dynamics of Congress and doesn't pick fights with them, doesn't play games, political or otherwise. Once you sort of set up a new structure for how it works, what Paul Ryan told me was, it's not words. It's the things you do. And until we understand that, it's just words. And as I said at the beginning, it's just political bullshit.
And so how can we as... Oh, yeah, applaud that. Yeah, applaud. I don't want to step on your applause.
It was limited, but I'll take it.
How can we hold those people accountable once we elect them? Like, does calling them help? Does shooting an email help?
No.
What's an effective way to hold the people that we put in office, hold them accountable?
You know what it is? It's going to Washington, D.C. You can actually make an appointment with your senator, your congressperson, get into their office, and talk to them one-on-one. I did it twice last year. Did you know that? You can make an appointment with their staff and talk to them.
That was a nice to have time like that, Steve. Someone shot back. So someone who maybe doesn't have the money to book an appointment, but that is good to know. You can book an appointment and all that sort of stuff. But
they also have listening sessions back here.
I got another question in the audience, Charlie.
Yeah, go ahead from the audience.
By the bar.
All right. By the bar. This should be a good one.
Hi. Be nice. I'm going to be nice. I'm very Midwest nice.
All right.
What's your name? Where are you from?
I'm Summer. I'm from Bayview in Milwaukee. So,
all right, Summer, yeah. Real good.
So I have a question about the general topic of body autonomy, because I know people who say, you know, why should I get a COVID vaccine? It's my body. It's my right to decide what to do with my body. Or they might say, you know, it's my right to have a gun to protect my house. But then the same people want to put into place laws that control a woman's body. You know, so it's, I can't reconcile those two with the same person is saying these two very different things. So what is it? Is it, you know, that we want to be independent and we want personal freedom? Where do we go from here? And why are there these two very different opinions about personal freedoms in our country?
Well said, by the way. Yeah, I think there's clearly a certain level of hypocrisy on the right on this issue. And that's been come really clear in the last couple of years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. And I think this campaign, you know, you talk, I think the right likes to trumpet up the freedom aspect of where they are on so many different issues. But I think when it comes to women's rights, it's a little bit different, right? It's a little bit different. And so I think obviously there's a certain level of hypocrisy there, but it is, people have different definitions of freedom as well. And I think you have a different definition of freedom on the left. I think, you know, when the vaccines were the main issue in the country, you know, there were people saying, how could you support a woman's right to control her own body and support a vaccine mandate at the same time. I think there are obvious reasons for that, for public health reasons. And at the same time, you're trying to make decisions to for the betterment of the country. But I think that it just comes down to people have different views of what freedom is. And the right seems to have a different view of what freedom means for women in particular.
I just think it's too easy to just say the right and the left, because there's so many different levels of on every issue, whether it's abortion. I can show you pro-life Democrats and pro-choice Democrats. Same thing on the other side. It's too easy. And we're talking about trying to mend some of this stuff. It's too easy, in my opinion, to just say they're all saying that they're not. I on many of these issues, I agree with Dan. So the reason, like somebody asked me, why are you a Republican? Because I believe in small government. I believe in balanced budgets at every level. That's the main reason. And how that translates to all of these issues is I listen. I want us to make the best legislation that we can as a country with all parties represented. We should never think that everybody thinks alike on an issue. It's just not the way it's going to be. It's never going to be that way. It's an interesting country. It's the greatest country in my mind because everybody wants to be here from all over the world. They want to come to this country. They want to learn here. They want to raise their family here. If we're such a shithole, why is that the case? Why would they all want to come here? Everything that we do as a country should be measured by equality, real equality, not one version for men, not one version for women. That's silly. It's outdated and it needs to go. And it will go. You elect the right people that have those same ideas, you can get to that solution. History, time, all of these things are in the way of making these fast changes. We don't do that. All of this stuff changes slowly over time. We'll get there. That's the way I maintain hope.
Well, that's all the time we have for now, folks. But if you want to listen to my full conversation, check out the Cripes Cast anywhere you get your podcasts.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down, just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin, the Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. Jane, Matt, Nair, and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Derek Mosley from the Lubar Center at Marquette University will be here to break down the latest polls, and we will wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Don't miss it.
Matt and Nair on air, weekday mornings at 11.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.